So, hi, my name is Hong Shen Zhang, from University of Nanjing. The reason I'm here and been doing this is because of a paper that's written by my student, Gary Angus, recently on the bullet cluster, testing the idea whether the gravitational lensing signal that we observe in the bullet cluster is a unique signature related to general relativity, or is it a general evidence for existence of non-baryonic material. But different people read the paper in different ways, may read it as it's a paper trying to prove modified gravity theory is right or wrong, or that's hardly the point. The point was to extrapolate more, to study more general than general relativity, answering the question whether dark matter is a concept unique of general relativity, or is a concept that's generally true in any metric theory where light follows geodesic. Okay? If light follows geodesic, one can do lensing, one can estimate within the parameters of that theory how much matter there is, and compare with what we know of the luminous material, deduct the difference, and see what's left, and try to explain the rest with the minimal theory first. The thing we looked first was neutrinos, and we said how much neutrino would be needed. The equivalent comes out to be about 2 eV, and you could do it in some other ways, that's a possibility, but as far as it looks, it still cannot yet be 100% excluded. So it was a conservative model to explore the possibilities of what the bullet is teaching us. Okay, so the emphasis is more on non-baryonic material in the form of collisionless neutrinos or some other things, but not so much as the proof or disproof of different theories of relativity. But nonetheless, the different theories of relativity was a controversial subject, and so a lot of people are very interested. Different people contributing this idea, so I will try to also bring that into the discussion. The task is a little difficult, so I'm partly asked to stimulate everyone to discuss. On the other hand, I haven't been given the chance to present what to discuss about the other side. So I was hoping Marusha could have done the job for everyone to educate how it was done, so that we can already start discussing. So maybe the thing to do, I'm not terribly prepared, particularly for this audience. So what I'll do perhaps is a short going through of how it was done in fitting lensing, and then we go to various points depending on people's interest.
I spoke for a lot less time, so feel free to take my answer.
I will want to. It's hard because once you bring up the subject, it's actually there are many forces of this topic. It's hard to be. It's hard to fit in to it's hard to be presented in a discussion fashion. Because there's a lot of background to go through before one can actually discuss. Let's see what Gary Angus did in explaining the bullet cluster. Let me do this. So what he did, you remember that beautiful picture Marusha has shown? It's got several centers in it. It's clearly non-relaxed, clearly has multiple centers of gravitation, okay, or material center. There's centers for the gas, there are centers for where the lensing signal is happening, there's centers for where the BCGs, or bright cluster galaxies are sitting. So it makes sense, whatever theory you do with gravity, it makes sense to work with a potential which has several components add up. The thing to do in order to avoid complication, to make things tractable, is work with relatively spherical components and superimpose them. That's what Gary did. So he used four potentials, each centered on four centers. Each of these potentials has a look, a spherical shape, has a look of this kind. No, don't assign meaning yet to each of these parameters, but this sort of a dimension of velocity, the velocity squared here, this is dimension of length. Okay? So these are the parameters you can fiddle with in order to create the lensing. Well, how do you do lensing? What you have here is the three-dimensional potential, not to be confused with the usual two-dimensional lensing potential assumed in generativity, because here the goal is to assume some is not to be restricted to generativity. Consider generativity as a subclass of a set of theories. So what you can do, so you have the total potential, and you can calculate what the gravitational force is by taking gradient. Okay, this is a linear process. You can always do it. You don't have to assume any theory. As long as metric theory, you can do this. It's a conservative potential. Okay, then you can know how light will be bent. Light bending, the deflection angle, will be integration of the gravity's perpendicular component integrated over the line of sight divided by c squared with a q going from the observer to from the source to observer. You can approximate that as infinities and assume the usual in the weak deflection you can assume straight line trajectory, the usual assumption. This is true in GR as well as any matrix theory. Okay, so you can do this. You calculate your deflection. And then you can, observers has these maps. What are those? Those are convergence. Convergence, what is it? Convergence. Okay. Convergence is the divergence of alpha. Okay? That's how lensing people like to phrase things. I don't know. Divergence is what we know is this parameter. And then there's extra scale in front to make this thing kappa to be dimensionless. Okay? I won't go too into that. So this far you obtain a quantity which is now purely projected on the sky. This you can fit with observation. You can already start to fit with the observed kappa map. The ideal thing to do would actually be to predict how galaxy's ellipticity will be in this potential, the background galaxy, and work with the original data. Because we don't have the original, because we didn't thought it was worth yet to go into this level of detail, we purely work with the kappa map, the convergence map provided by the observer. So we had the map given to us by Douglas Claw, kindly, and in the form of contours,
excuse me. I'm used to the gravitational potential falling off like 1 over r at large r.
Mm-hmm.
So are you somehow inside, assuming you're inside the mass distribution, are the p some fundamental parameters or are they the scale of the density distribution?
So you're used to generativity, that was always Newtonian gravity, in which the potential of a finite mass always fall off as 1 of r. That's a specific assumption of a that's a physical potential for how in other theories, in the ones which is the one we looked at, one of the classes called Tevis theory, tensor vector scalar theory, which has a nickname for non-relativistic version called modified Newtonian dynamics, but I don't want to go into that too detail. But in those potential, the potential of a point mass actually goes to logarithmic such that it explains the flat rotation curve of galaxies.
What about the solar system?
Yeah, the solar system would be fine. The solar system is, so the modification so it will modification happens at a large, at a sufficiently weak gravity, i.e. sufficiently large radius, such that the inner solar system remains Newtonian or general relativity. That's the chosen, the parameter it was chosen. But this is a, so what I suggest is we have maybe a different occasion going through some of these details about one of this specific theory, the peculiarities of the theory.
So what is P?
P here is a scale.
What is it?
Of
the size of it. What is its actual size?
Okay, now start fitting, and then we know the size. Okay, yeah, it's it comes out from the observation. But don't make assumption of what it is.
It's not from material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. This is a discussion section.
Okay. I have a quick question.
Roger had one, and then you too. Okay.
Oh, all right. My recollection of Mond was that it happened.
Oh, you jumped several slides.
It kicked in at low acceleration, mm-hmm. Having two different criteria. One is that it's in some sense weak, whatever that means. The other is that it's large. There's a scale P in there.
Yeah.
Is it that there's this transition from gravity that's Newtonian? My colleagues.
Acceleration.
Gravity here. That's well tested in the solar system.
Yeah.
What is the criterion that makes the transition to the
transition is when the field strength or the derivatives of the potential is weaker than a critical energy level, energy density level, or an acceleration scale.
Again, so when the different things, the derivative or the
derivative, it's with the derivative of the
itself,
gravity itself.
Some scale value.
Correct. Uh-huh. If you want to, yeah.
The scale value, not acceleration.
Yeah. In Tevis, which is a scale, which is a covariant form, then you don't speak of just gravity. You speak of the potentials four derivatives. Yeah.
Yeah.
That corresponds to an energy, density level. It's amplitude squared corresponds to an energy density level. That energy density level is roughly comparable to the present vacuum energy inferred. Vacuum energy. So at about those weak level, the modifications start to be important. But this is I have some slides on this, but I'm far from getting into that. Okay, so let me get quickly. I'm meant to finish this with 5 minutes.
Just a general question about.
Okay.
What about the inverse problem of trying to reconstruct the potential out of the Langston information, and maybe assuming that only the visible mass is there?
Yeah. So the inverse problem in this case is a little difficult to do. We choose the easier way is to do it from data to the derived theory parameters. It turns out this way we don't have to do integrations. We only have to do differentiations, which we know how to do. Whereas the other way around, we have to solve partial differential equations, which we don't have the full numerical tool yet. There are people who are building such tools, but we have not yet used them. But anyway, so from the divergence, one can even go further and predict amplifications. What are amplifications? There's another quantity called the shear, which is related to the convergence. And then there is certain combination of amplification. I'll just write it like this, to the minus one. This is a quantity that the flux ratio of a background system compared to what we see is related. Once this quantity becomes zero, singular, you create a critical curve in the lens plane. This is where the amplification diverges. Anyway, so as far as I'm going, here I have not assumed anything about generativity, etc. Okay, so one can in principle go from data to data, i.e. from fitting the observation kappa, one can derive the parameters P and V, and then predict amplifications, predict if strong lensing, etc. occurs. Okay, so try to stay away from. But at some stage, you will have to get into the problem of assuming a theory. That's when I'm predicting how much mass density will be. If I want to relate potential to mass, I have to assume a theory. I cannot be just broad about it. general. So the way to go from mass to potential to theory. In Newton's theory, that would be the Poisson's equation. But this is not being the only one. The one that some people have been considering and had a reasonable success rate in galaxy rotation curve is a modification of this, where you introduce an extra parameter mu, where mu is some function of gravity. For the time being, we can just say there is some critical acceleration a naught, and there is a scale mu related to that. By setting this value a naught to be zero, one recovers the generativity, and i.e., by studying in a class of models of this kind, it includes generativity depending on what we assume of the amplitude. What's the assumption of the gravity?
But Hongxiang, if you take Douglas's surface mass density map for granted, there is no general relativity to get a mass out of it. I mean, these are numbers, solar masses per square parsec.
Well, but you got that from the
anyway.
No, I mean, he takes kappa map from Doug,
right?
Which is a map of, I don't know, maybe I think I'm missing a point here.
Yeah.
Because this is a map which says there is so and so much solar masses per square parsec in that region.
No, it's no. Kappa is not that. Kappa is how much length, background light is being defined. You're thinking GR when you're thinking kappa is surface density. Kappa is surface density only in generativity.
But in
other theories,
it was used as such. I don't know. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll explain some. I can go over some subtleties. Okay. Anyway, cut the long story short. Here comes the fit to the observation.
Maybe you should clarify something. So we're a bit confused because.
Well, of course.
So usually one thinks that the deflection angle is connected to convergence. To the potential, and they are connected through Poisson equation.
No.
Right? No. Okay.
Break these two.
So what you're saying is that since you're using this expression here,
yes,
this is for a general potential.
Yes.
The fact that you're using a convergence map from Douglas Klow does not imply that you're using the standard Poisson equation that Douglas is probably used for deriving the kappa.
Well, he can express it in equivalent surface density. That I have no problem with. You can express that, but as far as feeding into the Lansing, I will take numbers kappa as. Let's look at the data. Kappa. Here's the data. Showing in red is the data, which are levels of kappa in equal contours. This value is about kappa equals 0.32. Okay, it's a dimensionless number. When kappa is close to 1, this is something becomes critical. Okay, i.e. critical curve will happen. But here we're relatively far from it, taking only Douglas state. There is still issues I will later on. This is not the only data available. Marussia's data is not exactly yet fully consistent with what Douglas' current version of the data. So this is because of the trickiness in deprojecting strong lensing and weak lensing. So the data situation might evolve in the near term, but we just take a data to start with. The red curve, so this is kappa equals 0.3, then 0.26, 0.1 something. Here's, I think, kappa equals 0.1. And here's the subcluster. This one has even slightly weaker lensing. This has a kappa about 0.3, slightly lower. So it's this contour here is here. Anyway, this is the data. As you can see, in weak lensing, things are always fairly noisy and jagged. This is quite natural. This always happens because of the because of this, the noise is just very high. Particularly, it cannot infer structures on smaller scales, as I was discussing with Marusha earlier. Anyway, here's the fits we did in black. As you can see, it doesn't capture everything here, but it captures the bulk of the features. And my understanding is, here is one sigma error. This is roughly one sigma error, i.e., we cannot draw an intermediate contour with confidence. In other words, information, so this is about one sigma, i.e., there is some issues with the fitting the Kappa map. That's related to how much gas there is in here. Because in here, we try to fit is, we also try to fit the gas mass
so
later.
Explain a bit more.
Okay.
So here you put four kind of
okay.
isothermal
yes,
spheres.
Yes, yes. Sorry, I jumped my
centers of mm-hmm. mass of the.
Yeah. So from the observed, from the potentials I gave you, which are four components, which are linear superpositions, one can take these derivatives, etc., work out the expressions, hence we're left with about eight free parameters, four pairs.
Where did you place them?
You place them at the apparent centers of the lensing, and the apparent center of the BCG, apparent center of the
but
the
BCG
gas.
Is offset, so
yes, there's a, we can we also tried the place it on the lensing. The difference is not so we can derive these eight parameters from 200 degrees of freedom we have.
If you wanted to use these modified gravity theories for galaxies, would you need additional parameters?
So far I haven't assumed any gravity theories. I'll come to that. Some audience wants to know. Okay, so if you want to do this, it turns out I can show you a fit. It fits the rotation curves.
So you don't need additional
no.
parameters?
Yeah, no.
You can use the same parameters?
Yes, we'll try to use this. We'll try to stick to the same parameters, yes. Okay, anyway, so as I said, I do have to at some stage assume the gravity theory, because without it, I wouldn't know how to predict mass density. And then I cannot compare with the Chandra, the estimation of gas mass in the system from the Chandra map. So in here, this is the already made assumption of the, in here, I think Gary Angus made assumption of this particular modification law. Okay. And then he made a map of the overall density. Now, how do we know this overall density is all due to baryons or gas or something else? We don't. What he found was, he assumed that the gas part is distributed from the observation, appeared to be highly asymmetrical. So he said, let's take away the symmetrical part of this map, the mass map, and left with only the asymmetric part, i.e., then he left with these two contours, i.e. these are the two blobs sitting here and here. Okay? So this is an underestimate of an actual gas, because the gas could as well have extended symmetric respect to this line. Why do we say it's a, this, why do we do symmetry? The reason is we think if there is dark matter, if there's non-baryonic material, non-baryonic perhaps we are still distributing in a fairly symmetric fashion because of a collisionless nature, whereas the baryons have been all jumbled. So that was the motivation. But we can even do better than this, but this is the what he has for now.
I have one comment about that statement. Well, at least in Newtonian gravity, when you do merger simulations, mm-hmm. dark matter
always get distorted.
It's never that spherical. Yeah. You have big blobs on the outer part.
Yeah, I agree. But from talking to Marusha, that he thinks head-on collision in this case is most likely a real head-on.
Yeah,
so
significant amount of dark matter left on the outer part.
Yes, but what you meant is the line connecting the two blobs are likely to be a symmetry line so that we can use this information to explore. But it doesn't have to be, but we can do better than this. But as a first try, we just did this. Here pop out some numbers.
Do you have a map of accelerations?
Yes, I don't have it with me, but I can the students will make one, and I think it will be of the yes.
Is it typical? So
it will be typical about A0.
The accelerations that appear in galaxies.
Yeah. Well, galaxies really has a range, but it's comparable to the mean.
If you were saying that the same modification, the same parameters work for the cluster in galaxies, and you were working within Mond-type modification.
Yeah, yes.
For these two to work, the accelerations need to be comparable.
Yes, actually, indeed is comparable, to make it short. But it works, the effect of modification start to appear on a certain scale, but the theory predicts on all scales. It predicts even in strong. It's just no difference from generativity. Okay. Anyway, here's some numbers, if you like to quote some numbers. And here's a try. So the cleanest test is to just use generativity. Assume this mu equals 0, 1. One can get the mass in terms of total mass enclosed inside 250. And this is what we get. And this is quoted in the Clo paper. So this one, we found a slightly smaller number in here for reasons I don't fully understand.
Just a question. This is enclosed at the X-ray gas,
from the main cluster, enclosed out of 250 kiloparsec. I think that's what this number is. That's this ring drawn by the term, I think. And he also did calculations of how if you draw a ring around the gas of 100 kiloparsec, that was the one number that were quoted, and he would get this number, and a bigger ring, I think that would be getting that. He also did this similar things for this cluster too. In comparison, we can do it in different other gravities, and these are the numbers. You see, the numbers evolved a bit, but not terribly, a lot. Okay? So, but in general, modifications tend to give you require less mass than what you would do without modification. And the gas mass he's getting is quite comparable to the as given by these papers. Remember to the models could improve, but it seems that all these models are relatively in the ballpark of fitting the overall observation. Okay, so how did you actually do the math? How did he actually do the math? There is a little equation I can write down, kind of helpful. GM.
Can you clarify what does it mean, gas mass?
Enclosed inside.
For you and for Clo.
Gas mass. So he basically, if you have the, would you? So we can apply this equation to get the densities. We can integrate to get the amount of mass inside a certain volume, and then compare the numbers.
Well, for Clo, is it determined from the X-ray, or is it determined?
For gas, he's assuming the X-ray. There, he doesn't use any assumption of gravity. Okay, no need to assume any theory of gravity. Assumes only hydrostatic equilibrium, which is slightly dubious for such a non-relaxed system. But that's the best we can do at the moment.
I'm slightly confused on one point also. I mean, is the idea to get rid of the dark matter and have only modifications of gravity, or
no.
Do you have matter with the
Okay, so what we found is, yeah. So what we found, what the punchline is that Look, compare these two numbers. Roughly, we'll give you an idea. But this is not a fair comparison. It's better to read it from here. So, what we find is there is more matter than can be consistent with the amount of gas in, that's observed in the system. Okay? And so, in other words, right. The red stuff is gas. Right. There's more stuff than that. We don't 100% sure what that stuff is, but there is need to go beyond collisional material. Okay? It could be the way to be collisionless. There are several ways. You can make them into stars that we somehow, or you can make them into particles somehow. And you could make them into particles that we know of to exist, such as neutrinos. You can make particles into things we know, we don't know exist, but we suspect it should exist. Okay, so that's where the different interpretations start to happen. We try to set limits on where we can, where data can tell us. So what we find is the baryon to dark matter, non-baryonic material to baryonic material ratio is about 2.4. It's here. Okay, so. Using the, I think it's more than that. I think this should roughly give you a number, about
5%.
Yeah, about factor 5 to 10, I think that's what
we'll get. Well, you know, from the 0.14 gas,
mm-hmm.
that's pretty close.
Okay.
Excuse me, Hong, I'm a bit confused here. So, what you're doing is you're replacing your potential, so that basically gravity is stronger
mm-hmm.
for a fixed mass, so you try to explain your convergence with less mass, right? To try to make the dark matter.
I'm not trying to convert. I'm trying to explore what answers it would give.
So then, if your potential different. That you showed before, mm-hmm. there are three parameters P.
Yes.
Right? So is that a different parameter for every blob of mass?
Yes, certainly. And
So for a point source, your potential. I mean, how does the point source know the P?
It's not. There are no points. There is no point source.
This is a blob.
There's no point source here.
Uh-huh. So if I took a Newtonian approach, that would be an isothermal sphere.
That's an that's what you call typically call a quad isothermal halo model. You can there are different people will read differently to the meaning of these potentials. If you think in the GR framework, those are quad isothermal potentials. If you read those mean finite mass models rather than infinite models.
So the standard mu is your comparison to the standard Mond type modification of gravity?
Mm-hmm.
It is?
Yeah.
And I should read in this table, I should understand from this table that the standard Mond modification is ruled out or is very bad compared to the data?
What it says is you can't do it with pure gas.
Which is the standard
Mond assumption. There are two different. There's a weak and a strong assumption. The strong assumption is to say I'm going to use only stars and gas. There's nothing else in the universe apart from stars and gas.
Yes.
There's another weaker assumption is to say I'm going to use all known material in the world. I.e., electrons are included, muons are included. Neutrinos are included, so this is two different versions, but not using anything more exotic than, no, so this is different.
So if you don't use anything except for baryons, and you are, the standard mu quorum is saying that this version of Mond is not enough to
account for cluster scale.
And should I read the 9, I divide the 9 by 1 and get some type of a measure of how bad it is?
It's about 2.4 is about what you should do. I think there's because it's different, there are different radii, you're not comparing apples and bananas. So
I cannot read from this table how bad it is.
Okay, sorry. I'm just saying that you should do it in the same same.
Okay. Can I be?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're using standard mode, right, we know that it is not going to work because the center where you see gas is not the center of kappa. Isn't that
theoretically that's not true, but in this case it is approximately true. So because of the nonlinearity, there's a paper that Gary Angus did, the first paper he did, was trying to just to explore, just answer this question, whether what we see in Lansing is what the mass density is. Found no. Lansing is not equal to surface density once you go beyond going to a nonlinear theory, okay?
It can be misplaced.
So there can be no matter in a region, but there is convergence, okay? Because of the global nature of the solution, it will place a convergence. This effect is particularly strong when we're dealing with very weak gravity, but it turns out in this situation, it isn't. So that effect, which was the thing which got us interested first, was not the predominant effect in here. We think there seems to be need for non-baryonic material independent of one's assumption of gravity. Okay, now that.
I have two questions. One is that you see this PI, they are different. That's the fitting formula. This is a scale factor.
We don't read meanings to those parameters yet. Those are fitting parameters for the potential, do not directly relate to mass parameters. We can calculate the mass parameters.
But then, if I have a Newtonian potential,
yes.
I can easily just have one parameter,
yeah.
Gravitational constant here, constant, this kind of thing. But here, if I have a PI that changes from place to place, then...
Oh, no, that's not the problem. Just like different galaxies of different sizes, that's what you said.
How can I determine that? I mean, that relates to mass. For example, if I have a isothermal sphere, and then I know some scale or circle of velocity, but that's related actually to the mass of the system, right?
Yeah.
But here, that PI, that's related to what?
Mass. It's also related. Yes,
that's
once you're...
unique relation to
yes.
mass. Okay, so
yes.
Another thing is that now you are considered four, say, blobs or something like that. So if I say I just put a uniform component, in a sense is that the universe is not the four components, they are not isolated.
Yeah.
And instead you have other structures, say in the rest of the universe, will that change your result or not?
In principle it would because of the their neighbor. I think talking about neighboring.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
How big that is.
There has not been a very good theoretical model to estimate this effect because of the geometry is so difficult. So, but can't tell you yet how strong this effect will be. But there are some theoretical argument to say that the quadrupole moment effect will die out quickly. So at some stage you would just behave as if it's isolated.
Okay, so you can't talk about isolated.
You can still speak about yes. Okay. You can still. Anyway, so I have not gone very far, but that's because this is meant to be a discussion, I guess. So the densities that he derived from fitting these models has a peak density, and from this peak density. Say the minimal, the same information you can ask, what is the density that, what kind of material can make such densities, and then he put in the usual Tremaine-Gang argument, or also worked by Sanders 2003, and then he end up with a number about 2 eV neutrinos. So 2 eV actually doesn't really say, well, sorry, 2 eV neutrinos, but so that's the minimal would be necessary to be consistent with the observation. One can play with higher mass neutrino or higher mass other particles, like 1 GeV particle, but the data does not yet strongly suggest that signature. There is no, we have not seen a divergent density the data suggests.
Isn't that ruled out by Wyman alpha far?
So the I think the present GR based limit is about 0.7 or something like this.
Based on like you're talking about CMB, but based on the high redshift.
Okay.
It's on a warm dark matter, right? So yes.
Yeah. I mean, what we need is KeV things, but the limit is. Yeah, the
right.
Right. Well, I'm familiar with that. The issue is there is whether there is a model independent limit on the particle physics associated with the neutrinos, and presently the most robust signals coming from still coming from particle physics themselves, without assumption of generativity, and those. There's an experiment that's going to run in 2009, which will have the sensitivity to detect the spectrum of electrons coming from beta decay. And beta decay, the most energetic beta decay particles will have an energy about this. But if neutrinos has such a mass, it will absorb some of this energy, and you will fall short of that. So by having incredible number of particles, and they can really zoom into this tiny region of NEC spectrum and see how massive is the neutrino. And the prospect is in about 2009, when the experiment starts, they can immediately push over the 2 eV range, 1 eV. So we can clearly say whether this type of neutrinos exists or not. If they found to exist, okay. Problem seems to is satisfied. If it's no, then a range of theory will be excluded. So we are not very far from the answer, even if we don't know.
It's existence in the right relic number density. Because this is not the only structure in the universe you have to explain, right?
Yeah. Right.
What's the structure formation like in this gravity with
2 eV? There is a theory. Not me, not from me, but.
Yeah, so that's the problem, right? You can say we don't have a theory, then so we don't need to. Explain.
No, but can you accommodate a neutrino, a 50 GeV particle?
To add neutrino here. Depending on if you add too much, you would be actually ruining, spoiling
right,
all the
density that you could tune if it was 50 GeV.
So if it was neutrinos, it cannot be denser on scales of 100 kiloparsec.
Yeah.
So neutrinos in principle has densities divergent. Basically, there is no real limit to them. We should be seeing the power law all the way. Okay. But the data, because of the weak lensing, even the strong lensing has a limit to where, how far we can probe. There's no indication that we need divergent density yet.
Right. Okay.
This is what Marusha was saying, that we're not 100% sure whether the NFW is the only answer to here. That ambiguity is just saying, on large scale, we're not sensitive to that question. We must be open about the possible things suggested by this data alone. But there are other data. There are galaxy data. There's cosmology data. One has to think. So I can briefly update people about some work that people have been thinking about in the framework of relative. These are work not in the framework of modification Tevis theory. It's not yet perfect, but then people can nowadays predict CMBs using Tevis. Or the modified guard, plus neutrinos. They can make sensible, but not yet perfect fit to the CMB. Okay, they can make and there's a recent paper by Scott Dodelson and Liguri, which explained how structure formation would happen in a theory where there's no dark, where you can, in the absence of, in purely baryonic gravity. So it's possible to form structures in a way similar to cold dark matter model, because the modification acts as an effective enhancement of gravity, just like dark matter is. When we see with there's dark matter, we don't mean we actually see that dark matter. We actually mean we see its gravitational effect. That gravitational effect can be achieved in different ways in the modification idea. There are some other work.
Do you need to change any of the parameters, like the scales?
Here, they played a little bit in Scotty's paper. They played a little bit of the way A naught. They played a little higher than the canonical one. Okay, but in the ones I did not play with it. I just set it to be. You can do it with any A naught. Yes, that's theoretically that's possible.
With one A, and you get the right. So you fix.
You, you leave the neutrino mass is the parameter for that.
So you leave OB.
Yeah, you
think about
yeah.
To nucleosynthesis.
Yeah.
Then you put a zero to the galaxy rotation curve, and then all the rest you do with neutrinos.
Yeah. Yeah. If you. It comes out that it turns out the best fit they did so far requires 2 eV neutrinos. So there is a slight consistent picture from independent argument, but yet not, I mean, there has to be more exploration to be, yeah, but one has to do that in this framework, which is actually requires some. Yes, those one I showed you was actually using a CMB code, CMB FASC.
But that's linear. Structure
formation.
But if you have simulations, like
N-body, we're not there. Nobody, you see. N-body, there's simple N-body simulations are already possible. There's a group in Italy, Luca Ciotti's group. Luca Ciotti's group has recently taken the brave task actually write a code which you can solve this nonlinear equation in general geometry. They use the expansion method. And so they can plug this into a particle mesh code and they run how galaxies will collapse in a modification. And so some results will come out. We'll see, you know, whether this can explain galaxy phenomena.
But if you put all this mass in a hot dark matter, mm-hmm. don't you erase a lot of the structure and substructure and so on?
No.
You don't?
No. The gravity is enhanced. That's the thing that does.
But
that's what
the
you mean
that's
certain.
Yeah.
I think
if I use your neutrino mass, what kind of omega neutrino I have?
That's 0.12, I think, 0.1, 0.12.
But that's one species, right, to measure?
No, six all add up.
Six EVs,
all add up.
But
then, it's 0.3.
It's 0.3, actually, that's good.
You want
0.3.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. If it's only 0.1, then you have lambda is 0.9 or 0.8 something. Then,
and omega don't agree with it.
Exactly. So that's.
I just like to do something a little bit.
Okay. The only
nice
thing
work.
Is that they may kick out of this room.
Mm-hmm.
We are after 2.
Are we over our discussion time?
So let's not, I mean, we can take a few minutes. Or probably
okay.
Not.
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What are the future? What future things can you guys do? Can you model other...
Okay, yes, that's what I was going to bring up, a slide about that. So it's nice to be looking at the bullet cast of a striking thing, you know, but there are a lot of relatively mundane, but also very beautiful gravitational lens where we have exquisite data accuracies of the image positions, yes? We can ask if these already play stringent constraints on the masses in these systems, as whether they can be accommodated even if you allow gravity to change. Okay, so it's answering the question of whether modification of gravity is sufficient on a smaller scale. So here's the work done published work. Done with David Bacon and Eddie Taylor at Edinburgh, where we took this is one of the first papers we write about lensing in non-generativity, and so we worked with only spherical models and made usual assumptions just to make things tractable. But nonetheless, we can make predictions for about 50 systems. 50 observed systems. The What's shown here is the redshift of the lens and the predicted lens required lens mass respect to the observed stellar light mass. I.e., if a theory is right, I should get a line, straight line like this.
How do you know the stellar mass?
Stellar mass from the light and integrating, assuming a de Vaucouleurs law.
Yeah, but
crystal, you do this as usual.
How do you know the stellar mass to light ratio?
The stellar mass to light ratio was taken from synthesis model by what's his name? Basically predicting how different populations would be at different redshift.
SED fitting.
Yeah. From
colors.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
that's uncertain.
Yes, we have the usual uncertainty and the usual uncertainty due to extinction, not knowing the extinction.
Amen.
So this is the prediction of different systems, so different lenses. I should be expecting a clustering of of things around one, which I seem to see. Interesting. So a lot of them seems to be more or less consistent with this picture, where this modification idea it seems all right, but there are quite a few systems above and below this line. Even things below this line, which is actually very strange. The above this line, this normally would interpret as the deficiency of material on scales of kiloparsec. Okay? In other words, we require more materials in this lens than actually observed star. Okay. It could be, in this case, the theory is excluded or something, or it requires additional material. But this time, you can't use neutrinos, because neutrinos will not cluster on galaxy scale. This time, you need something else. Okay? So that would be, if you can actually establish the case for these guys, you actually have a case for something like warm or cold-ish dark matter to exist.
So how about the guys underneath?
Yes, those are very strange.
Can you
so
read those names?
We actually had a little table. You should read the paper because it's been there for a year now. Because on preprint server for a year, monthly notice is being slow. there's a little table. The resolution here is not terribly good. I'll better show you the diagram. I can't see it very well, but I can read. I can show you. Give you hard print. For example, this one is. I think the ones. It turns out we found later on that some of these guys actually all have a bit of interesting things with them. For example, ones are actually at the center of clusters. There are ones which are central, which our models were presumably not accurate enough,
right,
because we have not taken into account of the material coming from the cluster. We only consider them as isolated gases. So there are also issues of we only consider spherical models, not yet axisymmetric. That's the other thing. Okay. So a student of mine is looking at non-axisymmetric lenses for these systems. See if these conclusions would change a lot if we assume a flattened model. And he found
two of the systems are spiral below, so you probably assume the wrong mass light.
The possibility, yeah. This is a B1133, I think, 1133.
HE whatever, 03112.
This is PKS something, 0121.
Yeah, that's
we should discuss the list, you know, see if you can.
What happened to lambda?
The other question,
hmm?
Sir, I was just wondering, what happened to lambda?
Oh, in lambda. Okay, that's another general topic. Can I bring out a slide on lambda?
Quickly, so why didn't you just do what you do for the cluster case in these cases where you know it's the center of a cluster or the center of the group? Why don't you add another potential?
Yeah. To be done. Someone interested, you can. It's easy. It's an easy computation to repeat. You give the usual formulations.
If you have a superposition,
you know, superposition if I apply here, if I look at your potential, mm-hmm. basically if I have a very massive object here, mm-hmm. and then, you know, small objects are just far away. And in fact, these small objects should still have, you know, just because it's more or less a flat rotation curve. So these small things still will orbit around.
You're getting back to your old problem, the question you asked last time about the neighbor.
That's my problem, right? And then if you look at the things, you know, how can that happen? I mean, if you measure velocity, satellite velocity or something.
It doesn't work that way. First of all, I can tell you, because there are some models we can track. We can actually do more or less analytically. We can show that's not happening. So at some stage, one system ends, another system starts. Okay, so it's not like it's flat all the way due to it. That's true. But the
scale, that means, you know.
Let someone bring up lambda, so I feel obligated to. So, what do we say?
One slide.
Okay, then I skip this one. This is an exercise to understand lambda and the dark matter in this Tevis framework. The game here is we know this Tevis theory can be defined in such a way to explain rotation curve. Okay, take that, fix your Lagrangian of the theory or the mu function, such that you produce nice rotation curves for both dwarf galaxies and bright spiral galaxies. You look, even those slight wiggles are actually, you know, this one is not a perfect one. That's why I said it's an exercise, okay? Because I did not fiddle with the mass-to-light ratio to get it perfect. I just want to show that it's in the ballpark. Now, Tevis is a covariant theory, so I can predict what happens in the time sector rather than the space sector. I can follow Hubble expansion in this theory. Okay, in this theory, you can write down a Hubble equation. It will be slightly different from the Hubble equation we wrote. So there's H naught squared equals.
The other half of the black.
Well, okay. Do 3 a pi g. You have your matter, you have your baryon, you have, you may have neutrino, you may have something else, a field. This is the field that the thing is unique about. And this proportionality constant is no longer, so let's call it, what did I call it? I forgot. Let's call it C or something. The proportionality comes. This is a function of the field. Okay? This is extra field, which is giving there is an extra field which has a strength very similar to the dark matter strength that we observe in galaxies, such that they produce the effect of rotation curve. Okay? So this phi has its own, satisfies its own equation. I won't go into it that. It's not an equation of state. It's a dynamical field. It evolves with time.
Does it have pressure?
You can define a pressure with it. You can define a pressure term with it. So there is a term which relates how phi, one derivative or two derivative related to matter and related to its own density, energy density. There is an equation related to that. Okay, there is a conference proceeding where you can read this in detail.
I'm basically asking about this A double dot equation.
So A double dot, oh yes. You mean this? This equation.
The derivative of that, right? That's where.
Oh no, I didn't do that one. I didn't do that one. Okay, just this.
Mm-hmm. Me in Tevis, right, we're using another field. Right, is that the same as kind of bringing dark matter back to the back door?
Yes.
So you're just coupling the field to your baryonic field.
Correct. It's a tracker field. It tracks the matter in a way such that it amplifies the effect of matter.
Right.
Okay, so if you have only a universe with baryon plus some little bit of a neutrino, then it amplifies its effect to create as.
And the first. Associated with that field?
This hasn't been, there's no quantum theory behind Tevis yet to say whether it's a particle counterpart.
So it should be a mass.
There should be. There should be. Yeah, there should be one, but there hasn't a theory worked out on it.
Yeah, but you see, you're trying to get rid of dark matter, and then through the back door, you're introducing a new field and that's associated with it, and you're back.
But it follows what you see, so that's very
It follows what you see. It's a quick.
What you see, the motivation is different.
Well, the motivation to get rid of dark matter by modifying
gravity.
Modifying gravity by introducing a scalar field, which introduces a new particle. Right? So you
Well, this is more similar to what people are doing to explain dark energy.
Yeah.
It's more similar than that.
I mean, Leon, you have a point there that the two type of apparently different philosophies actually trying to achieve the same goal using the same basic physics, i.e. particles, either new particles or new physics. But they're using different sectors of the particle. They're using different physics for them.
The philosophy is suddenly completely changed because for 20 years people trying to get rid of dark matter and suddenly you come up with a new theory but you along the way, so you're basically back at square one, except you're introducing coupling constants which you didn't even have in dark matter. So you're actually adding even more parameters to play with.
Dark matter physics actually has a huge amount of parameters. About supersymmetry, for example, has hundreds of hundreds of coupling parameters. Let's say, there's relatively simple. These theories typically have only a countable number of. Anyway, let's cut
it. What kind of coupling it is? Do we have any idea what kind of coupling? Why this thing is coupled to normal matter?
It's an assumption that the particles are not only bent by the ordinary gravity of the ordinary particle, but also this extrascalar field also bending. So their trajectory and bending light.
Oh, yeah, but then you need this actual field this, to be constant, more or less, you know.
Yeah, this is written phenomenologically using the mu function.
But do you have any, particle
physics? No, there's no particle physics behind.
Whatever, you know.
No. No, it's to be understood. It's too early stage. So the question about lambda someone was asking is, you can make a Tevis theory and you can make a lambda theory fitting the same data. Okay, so here shows these various things. Let's look at Hubble parameter. In solid and in dashed are the two in the past. So I think I did not choose a very good parameter such that you can see some differences. And here's a look at the horizon. It turns out the two are almost lying on each other. You can't really see the difference. I.e. horizon as a function of scale factor. Okay?
So on the y-axis?
Y-axis is anything, but here is the plot, the curve for the horizon in degrees. Here plots the Hubble parameter in units of 1 over megaparsec. Yeah.
So your psi must have negative pressure, right? Your psi field.
Yes, I think so.
It
Yeah, it creates the effect.
Then you have to generate energy. So.
And there is this mu function becomes important at the later on. So this drives the dark matter and dark energy phenomena, I think. This is because if this thing stayed constant and all at a low level, it wouldn't do anything. You would just have a pure baryon. Then you get the problem with explaining the the acceleration. But
also I don't know if it's right. It's a, do a transformation of Tevis and get rid of the scalar field. It's actually just a field.
Yes, there is one paper out by. Is this Pedro Ferreira's student, where he tried to use everything, trying to get rid of the. I don't know all of the details. Some of these are pretty.
Normal factor scale.
Yeah. This exercise is relatively simple to do once you define your how the dynamics work, and you can. So this is what happens in spatial direction in equilibrium. You can look at what will happen in the time, and this will be its prediction. And so, in other words, the acceleration of universe, as we see, is not a generic feature of lambda or CDN. It could be achieved by equivalent theories with appropriate parameters. This is in principle feasible. You want to look at it in practice, whether it will explain the CMB and everything. That's still open.
So now I'm a little bit confused. In fact, in this theory, it's not this original Mond theory anymore, right? In principle, I can
it's a
field. Then I still just put everything into the normal, GR, right? It's just a field. Then it's only the
it's metric
between this field. Yeah. And the matter that is in a very special way. So then I can just use this, I just use the normal theory to do all this.
You're very right. There is a duality of the thing. You can treat the thing as, look, we're seeing rotation curve, we're seeing matter, extra matter. Or you can see, we're just seeing extra field. There is, what we see is there's the metric of the near galaxies is more bent than what the baryon gravity is predicting. So we see light being bent, we see stars' trajectory being bent. There is certainly curvature. Whether that curvature can be read in two different ways, it's equivalent. The equations are slightly different.
Modify the gravity. I just modify, the energy content.
One degree of freedom.
The degrees of freedom is more limited.
The experiments that allow you to tell one from the other, you detect dark matter particles.
You settle the problem.
Or
yeah.
Be an equivalent astronomical equivalent.
Correct.
Now we are talking about the dark matter, and if we want to say, if GR is correct or not, GR, the Einstein's theory is correct or not, then here you don't need this Einstein's theory to be wrong. Or you can build all the theory into that framework by introduce a special kind of a field.
Yeah, but this field always is tied to what we see.
Well, but that's only that's the property of the matter or the energy content. It's not, so that's only just you can just pass it in that way, right? But then you don't need to modify anything except you.
It's like lambda, you can say it's dark energy or
something that Einstein introduced earlier, right? It's part of the theory or it's part of the energy.
Yeah. So you're not touching those equations.
Is it on the left or on the right?
Yeah, left or right. It's like lambda, right?
Mm-hmm. I should mention that Tevis is not the only theory in the market, okay? There are clever people who actually come up with very different, for different goals. For example, there's a theory come up by Shankaro called modified source gravity theory, which has sort of similar inspiration here, but the goal was not to motivate it by rotation curve. It was trying to explain the expansion, but also be able to explain structure formation. There, the modification was done in a different way. Okay? So, when we see modified gravity is in or excluded, what do we mean? Would we mean a whole class of theory being in or excluded? Or we say we have not examined them yet. We need to understand them. What limits are their generic predictions? So, this is I hope just to make us more aware of the possible loopholes of the usual argument based on GR intuition could be sometimes incorrect with these nonlinear theories.
So within this framework, do you expect the acceleration scale, let's say, on the traditional model to change its function of redshift? Somehow you couple cosmology to some field which also modifies the dynamics of galaxies. So, do you expect it to change? Can you? Is there any observational evidence that this is?
This may be a clue. Indeed, the theory in principle allows for the critical energy scale to change with a different stage of the universe. And it may give us different leverages and different redshift to explain the phenomenon. So But I have not yet pursued that left line.
Because of 10 to the minus 3, mu is CMD, right?
I'm sorry? Which
one? Factor of 10 to the minus 3, right?
This one. This is last scattering. Yeah.
Last scattering.
Yeah.
It's very different. So is there a signature in CMD that can tell you whether...
So the at last scattering, the size of the horizon is the same in these two models. Okay.
But the mu value is very different. So the observable that can get you that.
True. In the GR framework, this mu, by the way, is different from the mu in Britain here.
What mu is that?
Related, very simply related. One is it's called mu of the scalar field. So mu, for example, in the Mond language is related to this one by this. Okay? Such that when this goes to infinity, can you see that? When this goes to infinity, you recover generated. Okay? Mu equals 1. Mu. So this is a different one. So here the effect of the mu is not very strong at the scattering.
So okay, what is the observable where now?
Now, okay, this is now.
Yeah.
As you can see, the series are not, you know, at least for this model, not completely degenerate.
Yeah, but
in the future, they will be slightly different.
What is the quantity that you plot there?
C over H, one over C times H, Hubble parameter.
Okay.
So in other words, if we have very accurate supernovae data, we may be able to tell the second or third derivative. Here, we may, you know, say, yeah. Because the game of the name of the game is to not to fiddle with the function, you know, try to get the function from galaxy rotation curve, and not to fiddle with it and direct predict, so you don't have too much of leverage. But if you let this function to be loose, yes.
I have one question. So if in the LHC there's evidence of supersymmetry,
yeah,
say the neutrino is about 50 GeV, what happens?
Yeah. What happens?
It could still survive, right?
No. It won't survive. I think it won't survive. Hold on. If you find, that's a different, if you find it to exist, and that does that necessarily tell you its current cosmological abundance?
Exactly, it doesn't.
If you say, okay, there is one neutrino produced in a particle physics experiment, so does that prove dark matter?
You just said that.
Not,
rho
maybe not.
Yeah, you get plus rho,
plus another
or whatever.
Right.
And you can see it escape.
No, but then you get rid of the neutrinos and say it's neutrinos? You could, right? I mean, there's nothing special about neutrinos.
No.
Mm-hmm. But then your neutrinos will have very strange thermal properties.
Exactly. But that's what I'm interested in. What's
right.
Thermal property?
And that's what.
But
I'm still saying the fact that you can't. The CMB data fit very
yeah.
Well. You mentioned, right?
I think those will be the stringent, most
yeah,
stringent
but
tests.
But you're saying they don't fit.
Not yet. At the present,
so
the...
Yeah, what does it take?
Because, first of all, the models, I think the people who are running the models are still working on the, working on different, incorporating these mu functions. In the full perturbative. Yeah.
So
well, if you read Scottis' paper 2006, which
yeah,
okay.
It's so if mu to the minus one is becoming very small.
Yeah, this is when the.
This means that at the epoch of last scattering, it should be.
It's not
like
most.
Newton gravity.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's a.
There should be no signature in CMB or something.
Yeah, yes, I think that's more or less should be what it is. But I suspect.
Oh, if there are.
Yeah, it's from
the lingual. But so it only predicts the position of the horizon, right? It doesn't say the amplitude is correct. So here I cannot do that.
That's why you need neutrinos to shift the peak.
I have neutrinos. This is only one, yeah. So there is still some freedom in the in these theories to accommodate perhaps the third peak, but that is to be to be found out. But in the end, I wonder whether we can say anything about this is a philosophical question, is dark matter exists? Or dark matter, do we have to wait till the proof of general relativity before we establish the case of dark matter?
No,
or do we have to, can we just work with any theory or metric theory and show that the dark matter would have to be required in the theory? That would be sort of a goal.
I think your work is showing that dark matter is semantics. That's what your work is showing. If
because it still needs the dark.
Up to you.
Well, that's the most